Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, as you said about your bank holiday plans this weekend, I want you to take a moment and listen to the two incredible women sitting across from me. What they share in common is the tragic loss of a loved one all too soon in road traffic collisions. They are the very real, devastated families behind the statistics of fatalities on our roads. Sharon Cleary and June McArdle, good morning to you both.
Morning. Morning, Debbie.
You are sharing your stories in the hope that others may be spared your pain, and I really, really appreciate that you are doing so. Can I ask you, before I ask you each about your loved ones, it's a bank holiday weekend, there are more people on the roads, and are you more anxious during a bank holiday because you know that, are you thinking, will people arrive alive and get home in time, June?
I find it's every day for me, every day kind of getting in the car, or if you're going for a drive or seeing people on the roads, my anxiety would be more every day from what I've gone through, because I know like some people might not make a home that day.
Yeah, and Sharon, is it you? Is it more heightened, or is this your lived reality now?
Like June said, every day I'm anxious when I go out on the road, when others are out on the road, when my children are coming home on the school bus. You know, it is heightened, almost certainly, on bank holidays. My son was killed on a bank holiday. Adam was killed. So, yes, I am.
Tell me a little bit about your beautiful boy, Adam, whose picture I'm looking at here just in the studio.
Yeah. Adam was just gone 16. He was our pride and joy. He was a great chap. He's seen no badness in anybody. He had just completed his junior cert that June. And we received his results the September after he passed away. He was killed on August bank holiday weekend, the 1st of August. And he was just a great chap, full of life, full of smiles, everybody's friend.
How did he do in his exams?
He done fantastic. Absolutely. He would have been so proud of himself. We are so proud of him, how he done. He passed exams that I know I had been telling him, you have to sit down and study, and it was so hard to get him to do that, but he really done so well.
June, tell me, your dad was a unrepentant dub.
Oh, yeah. Hill 16, every Sunday the dubs were playing. And if they weren't playing on Hill 16, we were following them around the county. Hail, rain or snow.
What kind of a man was he?
Oh, he was larger than life, my dad. He was kind. He was kind-hearted, and he always there for anybody if they needed a hand with anything. He drove an articulated truck, so he was the moving guy for most people. Moved many of us from houses. He was a great dad. He was a great husband. He was a great friend. He just loved to just be up for the crack and the banter. First up on the dance floor, we used to always slag him over his dancing, because we used to say he looks like he's starting a lawnmower when he'd be dancing, but he wouldn't have cared. He was up there dancing and jiving away, and then at the end of the night he'd be getting everybody up for a sing song then.
And August, I think, you know, proved to be the cruel month for both of your families, just a year apart.
Yeah.
Your lives were changed. Can I bring you back, Sharon? You know, in those days leading up to the crash, when you look back now, have you got a very particular memory of the events leading up to your son's death?
Yes, just little things. We had actually went to Wicklow the week before, and we had a great time in just one of the camping sites, actually, just a play area, and Adam loved canoeing and everything, and he was there and he was just at his happiest. The day before the crash, he wanted a McDonald's, just the little things like, and I remember saying to him, no, just I'll go in during the week and get you one. But I ended up going in for that McDonald's, and I wouldn't have got to get it for him in the following days, obviously, because it was the next day he was needlessly killed.
And he went out for, like so many little kids, he went out for a cruise.
Yeah, I had went that day to get meal for cattle. Adam had never went in a car with anybody before, aside from myself or my husband. And that day, his friends had invited him from school to go, and Adam had actually let his phone fall a few days previous. So he was using his iPad, and he sent me a message, gone cruising, back before nine. He sent the same to my husband. His friend got into the car with them as well, but Adam was a backseat passenger. The driver was an adult, and Speed tires that was on the car since 1997 was a huge factor. You know, there's two types, you know, of, you can go out on the road and there's an accident where somebody may drive into somebody accidentally, or, you know, or
a distraction or something.
Yeah. And then there's a crash where Speed is involved, just dangerous driving in general. And, you know, that's a crash. There is no excuse for a crash. There's, you know, we all need to slow down.
Your son was 16, and I know one of the things you're quite passionate about is seatbelt use. Was he wearing one at the time?
Unfortunately, he wasn't. Every time he got into that car, my car...
Drilled into them.
It was drilled into him, like it is for my younger children as well. And it's a habit to put on your seatbelt. You know, you do get into the habit where you don't think of it. But that day, for whatever reason, Adam was in the back seat. He hadn't a seatbelt on, but they hit a tree and Adam was in the back seat. He had no chance. There was serious speed involved as well.
Sharon, you know, you often see it on, you know, TV shows or in movies. There's a knock at the door, or you see that kind of shadow of the policeman or policewoman or a member of the Gardaí. Do you remember the moment you found out about the crash?
I do. My husband is a truck driver, and that day he had come home from work early, and our local community guard, just as Eugene was driving in the gate, he arrived at the same time, and I was outside playing with my daughter and my stepson, and they were on bikes, and I just remember seeing the guard coming in, and he said to Eugene, come over here for a minute. And I fell to the ground because he didn't have to tell me. I knew. I don't know. A mother's intuition, maybe. I don't know. But Eugene took the children up to his mother's house as soon as he could, shortly after
that. They were quite young at the time.
Yeah. Sarah was 5 and Oisín was 6. And he had to pass the cross close to the crash site. It was closed off. He had to take the children past there. Now, they were naive to it, thankfully. But he came back, and I remember I was sitting on an armchair and the guard was sitting close to me. And I remember, even though I knew, I remember having to ask the question. I still had to ask it. Was Adam killed? Even though I knew, I had to be sure. And he obviously confirmed for me that he was. And Eugene came back at that, around shortly after, and we went up to the site, where it happened, and I wasn't allowed up for ages to the actual car. And I could see the emergency services, the ambulance, the fire services and guards. And I begged and I pleaded just to go up. But I couldn't until they had prepared Adam, and I had to identify him on the roadside. And I just remember looking back at one of the ambulance personnel, and he had tears in his eyes, and I can still see him to this day. I can remember every word that was said. I can remember begging them for a blanket because I didn't want Adam to be cold.
And these are the things, isn't it, June? You know, your dad was a very, very accomplished road user, and he was on his motorbike at the time, but he'd actually been out on a gorgeous errand for you that morning, hadn't he?
Yeah. So the day my dad was actually killed, I was actually the last person to see my dad before he died. He'd called into my job. I worked in Racoole at the time, and he called into me to deliver my wedding invitations. I was getting married 11 weeks after his accident had taken place. I was getting married 11 weeks later. And he called in, and I'll never forget it. I was only after mopping the floor that particular day. It was a nice day. And he called in, and he came in, and my dad was like, for safety, like he had the proper helmet, the proper bike gear, never left the house without a high-vis jacket, and was like completely like aware of his surroundings. He drove an articulated truck all his life, from as long as I can remember. That was my dad's job. He was a truck driver. This particular day, he stopped into me. And to remember him giving me the wedding invitations, and my dad would have been a bit like me. He liked to be organised and couldn't believe I had left it 11 weeks to hand out wedding invitations. The people who knew the wedding was coming up, and he was like, now make sure you get those wedding invitations out this evening. And I'm like, yeah, OK, I'll get them out tonight. Like, there's no rush on them. Like, people know. And I said, yeah, OK, I'll talk to you then. And he was like, right, bye. And off he went to work. And I texted my mum just to say he'd left and he was on his way home. And she said, OK, grand. And my dad kind of...
The little tiny details.
You could time my dad to a T. So I texted then about an hour later, because he'd stopped for petrol along the way. So I texted her an hour later and I said, is he home? And she said, no, not yet. Gave it another little while. I was like, maybe it's Friday evening, might be a bit of traffic. Another little while. Is he home? No, not yet. Text her another little while later. I'm in work on AA Road Watch to see if there's traffic or, you know, if there's a collision, maybe, like, you know, that delayed him. Sent her a sad emoji face then, and I didn't hear anything back after the sad emoji face. So then I rang my husband and I was like, oh, my dad hasn't arrived home from work yet. And he was like, oh, he'll probably be home in the next little while. A while later, I rang him back and I was like, my mum's not texting me back.
Did you know? Did you just
I had
like
a feeling.
Just like Sharon said?
Yeah,
that
I had
instinct.
A feeling. Like where I worked, a customer came in, and I worked in the salt therapy clinic, and I left the person down to the room, and I remember putting the salt into the machine, and just saying to myself, "Do you know, I'm going to leave here, and I'm going to have to run down that road. He's on that road." For some strange reason, I just had that feeling, and a while later, I rang my husband, and he's like, "I can't talk to you. There's somebody on the phone," and he hung up, and then I remember being so annoyed because he wouldn't talk to me. And I was sitting there, and the next minute I seen him at the door of work, and I buzzed him to let him in. And he was like, come over here. And I'm like, don't tell me. It was like I knew. It was like I knew. And he's like, just come here, I have to tell you something. And I remember him saying, like, my brother Gary had called, your dad's been in a road trip. And I'm just shouting at him, don't tell me, I don't want to know, don't tell me. I remember then running. Now, I worked in this place on my own. I remember running and grabbing my bag, and I was gone. I didn't care who was coming in behind me, but I was gone. And my sister-in-law then, she came in, she owned the place, and she came in and she was trying to calm me down. And I remember just screaming at her to get out of my way. I had to go to my dad. I had to go. And I remember getting in the car. Oh, God love my poor husband. He was sobbing. And I'm like telling him to shut up crying. I'm like, stop crying. Why are you crying? We don't need to be crying. You have to drive. You have to concentrate. And I remember driving, and we were sitting in traffic, and I had my hand on the door. And I remember feeling like just opening the door and just running down the motorway, and it just stopped for a second. And I said to my husband, is he dead? And my husband just went silent. And that silence was the, you know, he hadn't the heart to tell me he had died, you know, and I knew by his silence that he was dead.
And you went in that moment from organising your wedding, a big joyous occasion, to organising your dad's funeral.
Yeah, literally, like, and it's true what the campaign says, you never know what lies ahead on the road. You just, like that, I went from one day, a couple of hours, like, going off after work to hand out invitations to, like, is this wedding even going to go ahead now at this stage?
For you, Sharon, I know you recently moved house, but are there reminders for you everywhere of the crash, of Adam, and just that huge moment in your lives that changed everything?
Yes, most certainly there is. We live less than 3 miles from where Adam was killed. It's been 7.5 years now since Adam died, since he passed away. But the blind in Adam's room in our old house has never been pulled up. It still hasn't been. 2 weeks ago, I finally, after 7.5 years, emptied his room. And it was the hardest thing ever. I just couldn't do it. I would hate for anybody to have to empty their child's room. That's why we all need to slow down. We all need to take heed.
June, like, I mean, in both cases, in both in respect of your dad and of Adam, there were criminal law processes. There were pleas to dangerous driving causing death. There were sentences and there were driving bans in both. But I think when you speak to the families of road traffic victims, what they say is their sentence is for life.
Yeah, it is. Like, and it's not like, it just haunts you forever. It's one of those days you, like, you see it on the telly. And I remember, you, like, before my dad was killed, seeing road traffic ads, I'm like, oh my God, that must be so terrible. And you know now yourself what people actually go through. And it's not just the case and the court and everything else. It's years after, like, other people's lives move on, but yours is still there. It's still missing that person. And, like, since my dad's passed away, I've had 2 beautiful boys.
You would have had a beautiful granddad.
Well, the best granddad in the whole wide world. And, you know, it's even for them. Like, my little boy, he's 4, but we might as well say he's about 40 the way he goes on some days. But, like, some days he'd say to me, how come I didn't get to say goodbye to granddad? And it's stuff like that that just kicks you in the stomach. Or what was granddad like? And how come I don't get to get brought to school? Because some days my dad would have brought me to school in the lorry. And he'd say, how come granddad doesn't get to bring me to school in the lorry? And I'd be like, wanting to tell him, well, because somebody wasn't paying attention to the road, that's why you can't get your granddad.
And what's really extraordinary when you look at the statistics from the Road Safety Authority, like 73% of road traffic accidents happen on our rural roads. It's the reason why, obviously, we've changed in terms of the speed and the mileage does. Are you more conscious or more anxious, both of you, yourselves, as road users, both in terms of driving cars or just being in traffic generally?
Most certainly, yes, I'm more conscious, but I am most certainly very anxious on the road. I'm anxious when my children are in the car. I'm worrying when they come home, if they're late coming home on the school bus. I don't want them in cars with anybody else. Where the bus, I'm worried about. I don't want them on a bus with anybody else. But I know I have to allow that as well. I have to allow normality for my children.
Do people talk to you about them, or are they, you know, sometimes when, particularly when it's been a child loss and people are perhaps nervous or they don't want to upset you, is it important for you to talk about
it? Yes, it is. I love talking about Adam, but people are wary of what they may say. They're worried if they should bring up a conversation about Adam, but I want that. But it's understandable that they don't know how to approach it. You know, it's,
you go through, I think, so many chapters after you've lost a loved one, but particularly when you've lost them, June, in these circumstances, and there's nearly chapters, it seems, to each part of the journey. In terms of the criminal law process, and I know there was a conviction and the outcome of the criminal process for you, how did you deal with that chapter?
That was quite a bitter pill to swallow, because like the guy got a 2-year suspended sentence and a 3-year driving ban. Like, stricter laws, penalties, or maybe making it feel like the person that died or passed away, life actually mattered. It just seemed to me like my dad's life didn't really matter. Like,
did you feel that about the outcome of the process, that, as you say, you've been, Sharon, you've been, you and your family have been given this life sentence, but again, the criminal law process was a part of the chapter?
Yes, it was so difficult. So it was. And the driver of the car that Adam was killed in, he was given 3.5 years. He was to do 1.5 years of that.
18 months were suspended,
yeah,
was
it? Suspended. Yeah. He also got 7 years off the road. But he'd done 9 months. 9 months. And I am doing a life sentence. Adam was robbed of his life, a young life. He had only turned 16 3 weeks beforehand. We were robbed of watching Adam grow up, become a man. Myself and my husband got married on Adam's 21st birthday, 18th birthday, sorry. And he wasn't here for his 21st confirmations. He didn't get to meet his little brother, Rian, Layla Rose, his little sister, Sarah, my older daughter, and Oisín as well. They miss him so much. Layla Rose, my 3-year-old, we were at Adam's grave the other day, and when Eugene, my husband, said Adam is in heaven, she turned around at his grave and she said, "Are we going to collect him now from heaven?" They know all about Adam, but they still don't understand at that age.
It's the grief that both you and your families have gone through, perhaps the reason why you've punctured the veil of your own privacy, June, to come forward and be part of this campaign.
Yeah, I've always said if I could at least stop one family from going through the heartache and the pain that my family have gone through, then this is all worth it. Like, to just stop this, like, the horrific pain. Like, I see my mum, like, my mum and my dad are gone now since they were 18. My dad, the day my dad was buried was my mum and dad's wedding anniversary. You know, to see the pain and the heartache she goes through on the daily, and my brother, like, there was only the four of us. My brother and my dad were inseparable. You know, they were best friends up and even till my dad died. My brother was still going to work helping my dad.
And you're trying, obviously, both of you, to spur people going through that. Sharon, you know, you were talking about the difference between a crash and an accident, and sometimes what happens on a roads is down to maybe stupid mistakes, momentary loss, a distraction, something, you know. And I know there'll be people listening to in their homes and possibly in their cars. What's your message to, you know, to people out there?
Just slow down. Watch that RSA, their new campaign. Listen to us, the families. This is real. Put down your mobile phone. Slow down. Stop flashing somebody when you come up to where there's a Garda checkpoint. Stop flashing your lights for other road users where you might be alerting them to slow down for that moment, but when they come up near it and have went by it, they're speeding again. They're endangering their lives. They're endangering the lives of somebody else.
And we all, don't we, have a role to play, June? Because I think, again, look at the RSA statistic, about half of us think that it's probably okay. You probably think there's no problem if you go 10 kilometres over the limit or the speed zone that you're in, and maybe a smaller percentage think that it's okay to even do a little bit more than that. But all of those rules can make a huge difference.
We do really need to, I think, we've become complacent in our driving and complacent as a nation. And we're going into St. Patrick's Day weekend. We're an Irish nation, you know. we're going in to have fun, but we also need to be aware of the dangers that are out there. Slow down, put the phone down, put the seatbelt on. You know, so what if you don't look cool because you have your seatbelt on? You know, that's you need to, we need to just be more aware and own what we're doing.
I am so, so sorry for what you have both been through and your families. And I know it's going to resonate with so many people who are listening. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences today and for telling us all about Adam and Christopher, who are beaming at us here in the studio with those gorgeous pictures. Sharon McClear and June McArdle, thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much there. Thank you.